The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at TNTRadio.live. TNT Radio wants to hear from you. Call Rick Munn and Natalie Cheel now. From the U.S. and Canada, call 1-888-201-6425. From the U.K., call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Yeah, you better believe it. It's Monday, the 20th of March, 2023. This is TNT Radio. We are coming at you live from an undisclosed location in Brisbane. There's a secret bunker there, allegedly, on the Gold Coast. That's where our studio team are holed up, and that's where we're connected to, and that's who you're listening to right now. This is another day. It's another week. I'm going to be cheesy here. It's another chance to shine. It's another chance to shine. That's what my old area manager in the bank used to tell me on a Monday morning. And let me be brutally honest, it used to make me want to put my hands around a certain part of his body and squeeze until another part went black. But anyway, let's not get into cheesy management speak here. I'm live with the wonderful, the magnificent, the incredible export from Reading, also known as Natalie Cheel. Natalie, how the hell are you?
Morning, Rick. I could say that going on from what you just said, it's a fresh week, new goals. So it's a good way to start the week, isn't it?
Well, it is. It is. Let me kick us off with a bit of good news. Come on, because, you know, we've been labelled doom merchants and prophets of doom and, you know, always dwelling on the negative. Well, here's something positive, or is it? I got a message from my bank. Yes, a message on my online banking to tell me that I'm getting 5% cash back on my supermarket shopping if I use my debit card. So from 9th of February to the 30th of April, 2023, I will earn 5% cash back if I use my nationwide debit card to pay for my shopping at a wide range of supermarkets. And my February cash back will be paid to me in about 3 weeks from now on the 11th of April. And I'm curious, I'm just wondering, banks being banks, they seem to have come all over generous right now. They're paying me 5% for using a debit card. Why, oh, why might that be, Natalie?
Well, generally, if something sounds too good to be true, it is what I've learned over the years. So that makes me think, what are they getting out of that? Have they made some agreement with the government, with someone else? Are they using that to track what you're spending, what you're doing? We've heard that they want to bring in eventually linking it to your carbon emissions, don't they, your spending?
Yeah.
So is this part of a research project that they've agreed with someone to track your spending? Who knows?
For sure.
But I certainly would be questioning what that's about.
You know, banks, you know, they're a necessary evil, really, aren't they? Well, at least they have been for some time. A lot of people feel that they must use banks. And then, of course, the apps came out. You get your online banking app. It's so much easier, so much more convenient. Used to be you had to do a thumb scan. You remember those iPhone 6s, a thumb scan? And now it's full facial recognition. You can slap your ugly mug, in my case, in front of your phone, and that will unlock a world of banking options to me if I scan my face. Now I'm getting 5% cash back for not using cash, by the way. They're giving me cash back. Encouraging it. And as you rightly point out, NatWest, which is not a bank owned by you, I hope. If you owned a bank, it would probably be called NatWest. Get it? Boom, boom. But anyway, woo-hoo. Terrible attempt at humor on my part there. But they are tracking people's carbon emissions and telling them at the end of the month, by the way, that bag of carrots you bought in Sainsbury's last Saturday, we had to ship it all the way from Kenya, and there was a carbon footprint, and they're giving you the option to offset that with a charitable donation. Natalie, will you be making charitable donations for your horrendous carbon footprint over the next month or two?
I can't imagine so. So how long after they start paying you for your transactions is that report going to start coming through? It won't be long, I'm sure. I see on my banking app now, it's like you can do the credit score straight away now. They're kind of advertising, you know, come on and check your credit score. So I expect in the same way, it won't be long before it's come on and check your carbon emission footprint. It's all being set up, isn't it, to do the same.
They're keeping their eyes on us, literally, with the old cameras everywhere, and now even through our banking applications. I won't say don't use them, because I must admit, I do use online banking. I don't like going into branches. I don't like queuing. But try not to use the facial recognition stuff. Try not to do the thumbprint scans. Don't let them have any biometrics in your body. At least limit the exposure of the information that you're giving to said banks, and I think that applies to everybody out there. We've got to take a little nanosecond break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to our old sparring partner, Dee Denslow, and then the phone lines will be open at around about 15:15. So if you're listening in from anywhere in the world, or the solar system for that matter, the universe or the multiverse, as some people are putting forth, and you hear the radio beams coming into your antennae, you can give us a call and link up with us online on TNT Radio live or via the phone lines in about 10 minutes time here on TNT Radio.
Breaking down the headlines.
It's the news I trust.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, Darren, we've had a little sweeper earlier on telling us about beeping noises that shall be emanating forth from many people's mobile phones. Again, the old devil in the hand, the mobile phone on St. George's Day, apparently the 23rd of April 2023 in England. Natalie, you've probably, we've all three of us talked about this last year, never really manifested, but now it's rearing its ugly little head. What do you make of it, Natalie?
Well, I live in a testing area. So in August 21, they used Reading to test this siren out. It was horrendous. I did actually turn it off on my phone, but I hadn't done it on my son's phone. And he had it in his hand. He's autistic anyway, and it caused him great distress. I mean, it's an awful noise coming from the phone. Nothing like I've heard before, and you have to switch it off. So it's very Hunger Games-like to me, you know. They're setting it up. Yes, at the moment you can turn it off, but how long before you can't turn it off? It's like, it feels like what they're saying, it's weather, but how long before they say emergency, emergency, you can't leave your house. This is the siren you're going to need to use. That's my opinion so far. I don't know what you guys think.
Daz, what do you make of this? We've talked about this before. It didn't happen, but now it's going to happen. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, this to me just seems a bit of a continuation of like Project Fear. It's a way to go, oh, we need to scare the public. Just on everybody's phone. You can imagine half the people who have got it turned on will rush out into the streets staring at the skies thinking what's going on.
Yep.
And I don't understand why is it necessary? It's not just in the UK that they've put this system in place. We've got it in US, Canada, Japan, Netherlands. I suspect it will expand across the West. And to the other sort of first world countries, it'll be everywhere, no doubt. And you also have to ask the question, do they have an emergency planned in which they need to use this system to inform everybody? Now, of course, that's a bit, you know, I've got my radio tinfoil hat on there, but you do have to ask that question. And it's described, this system is described by the government as life-saving. The emergency alert system was launched on Sunday, will be tested nationwide in the early evening on April 23rd, as you said, Rick. The test alert will cause any phone connected to 4G or 5G mobile networks to vibrate and will be accompanied by a loud siren for up to 10 seconds. And you will not be able to use your mobile phone until you've turned this off. Now, you can actually go onto your mobile phone. I have an iPhone for my sins. I bloody love my iPhone. I couldn't live without it. I love it. I can't get it. Victory of mine. I love it. Anyway, if you go all the way down to the bottom, of your notifications in settings, you will have two alert options. One is extreme. That sounds quite bad, doesn't it? Extreme alert. And then below it, you've got severe alert. I have no idea what the difference between extreme and severe, but maybe we'll find out when the bombs start dropping, or we've got the latest plague, or something that they need to alert everybody at the same time to say there is an emergency. And I can't really think of a reason why everybody in the UK would need to be alerted for an extreme or for a severe alert at the same time. But nevertheless, you can disconnect or turn off these options on your mobile phone in their settings. And I have, I did exactly that as soon as I saw the social media posts going around on Twitter, etc. yesterday. I turned it off. If there's an emergency, I'll decide that for myself.
Yeah. By the way, if you haven't updated your iOS, which I haven't, I've had this particular phone for over 3 years now. I do not do iOS updates. So the option's not even on my phone. I think it's iOS 13 or 14 or later. Mine's 12.2, something crazy like that. So they can't even send me an update to my phone, whether I want it or not. And as Darren rightly pointed out, if you don't know this already, go to your settings, scroll down and disarm or disengage from all alerts. Natalie, has your phone been updated, or are you expecting a blast from the government on the St. George's Day?
I mean, I like you, I try not to update on the iOS updates very often, but mine, I must have updated further than yours because I'm able to switch my alerts off. I think, I'm 40 years old. In my 40 years, I cannot think of one incident that would have needed a nationwide alert sent out. The only thing is possibly some type of bomb, that they could send out. But apart from that, if it's a weather incident, they're going to be well aware of that weeks before. Terror incidents we've heard of. Yeah. Oh, emergency alert. Thunder today. I can't see, apart from like what Darren was saying, that they're setting us up for the future. The emergency alerts are going to be more designed to keep you in within a certain area or your house, because I cannot imagine any other reason for it being done.
Let's be honest, right? Everyone these days is connected in some way, shape, or form to the news, whether it be through the mainstream media, the alternate media, social media, whatever media you want to call it, or just simply talking to their friends, okay? Everybody pretty much knows what's going on if a catastrophe were to happen, a big one affecting everybody. So let's face it, if there is a disaster, it goes out on the media, social media immediately. People pick up on it. Look at Twitter, for crying out loud. It's 150 million tweets, all the same thing, retweeting, hey, this has happened. We don't need this. So to me, it's nothing to do with an emergency. Is it not just the government sending out a message? We can access your phone when we want. We will make it make a nasty noise. You shall not be able to use it until you acknowledge our message to you, unless you have it otherwise disabled in your settings. I think it's just a flex. It's just a flex from the government. It's got nothing to do with disasters. It's just saying, hey, we can tap into your phone on St. George's Day. It's going to make a nasty noise. Doesn't matter if you like it or not. Go disable it if you must. I think that's what this is about.
And a data
social conditioning tool.
And a data collection exercise as well. How quickly do people respond? Which phones have not turned off their notifications?
Yes.
And which ones have been non-compliant? And people go, what can they get about, what sort of data can they collect just on the timing of you turning off your phone so you can use it again? I bet that data is massively important. On mobile phones, the people who watch your mobile phones, they know when you go to the toilet because you put your phone down, use the toilet, come back, immediately pick your phone up. That data is recorded. You might think that sounds stupid, but they know when you go to the toilet just from your mobile phone use. And so, and that's useful. And they could do the same with this. I'm just using that as an example because it's a
I use mine on the toilet. I don't know about you guys. I'm going to be brutally honest here. I don't stop using it when I'm on the dog. Yeah, I'm fucking the system completely. I don't stop for anything. So that data is slightly skewed with me. But that's a very good point, Darren. A very, very good point. how many people acknowledged this alert, how quickly did they acknowledge the alert, how many people disabled the alert, and how many people were we not able to send the alert to because maybe they haven't updated either their iOS or their Android operating software, or they don't actually have a smartphone. They've reverted back to the old Nokia 3310. Yep. What do you reckon, Natalie? Is it a data harvesting exercise as well as a flex from the government?
Well, absolutely. But I think it's also important to remember the kind of other side of people. We are obviously much more aware, but the same people who were petrified by COVID are going to be influenced by this. You know, they're going to see emergency alerts on their phone, and it's going to be something that they genuinely think is important. And there are going to be people that are really fearful when that siren goes off. It is a social conditioning exercise as well as data harvesting. And it will affect, there'll be people that will really be mentally scarred by it, a siren going off, if that continues. Yep. And that's part of what it's designed to do.
Keeps everyone on their toes, doesn't it?
Keep you on your toes and keep you off the toilet. That is one of the primary drivers behind this iPhone shenanigans or Android shenanigans. But listen, we've got to wrap this one up or put a line under this one. No doubt it'll be manifesting itself again closer to the time. A lot of people kicking off about it, complaining about it, rolling their eyes about it, as I am also. But hey, it's going to happen whether we like it or not. So Darren, muchas gracias for that input there this morning. Hopefully you and I'll get talking again in the next hour. This is TNT Radio. The lines are open. Don't be afraid to call us. We'll be right back after this short break here on TNT Radio.
Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
What does that tell you when one side of the debate doesn't actually want to address the merits of an argument, but they want to smear, slander, cancel, defund, and deplatform anyone who challenges their narrative, so to speak?
It means that they have no interest in the truth and they have a political agenda and they promote it with propaganda.
So tell me a little bit about why you feel you're uniquely qualified to write this kind of a book.
I feel that I'm qualified because I spent 2 years writing it. And there are 800 footnotes. So if anyone disagrees or questions where the information came from, that's fine. By the way, I'm only a student. I didn't do any of these tests. I just read about them. And most of all of the information comes directly from the U.S. government. If we actually look at what the NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and the EPA and NASA, what they actually found when they did their studies, everyone would agree with what we're promoting, that there is no problem. There's no problem with global warming. There's no problem with the seas rising or accelerating. And all of the other claims are just totally false.
The Mark Morano Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Google and Facebook, they don't sell you anything. They sell you.
Facebook constantly manipulates their users. They do it by the things that they insert into the news feeds. And they do it by the types of hosts they allow their users to see.
It's what Google and Facebook are doing on a regular basis. By suppressing stories, by steering us towards other stories rather than the stories we're actually seeking. That's the real manipulation that's going on.
I was a design ethicist at Google, where I studied how do you ethically steer people's thoughts.
It will always favor one online music service over another and one candidate over another.
Google and Facebook has the power to undermine democracy without us knowing that democracy has been undermined.
There's what I call the creepy line, and the Google policy about a lot of these things is to get right up to the creepy line but not cross it.
Google crosses the creepy line every day.
Discover how society is manipulated by Google and Facebook. The creepy line at salemnow.com.
Are you listening?
Yeah, I'm listening.
That's all you have to do. We'll do all the talking.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, just having a look at the live chat. Big shout out to all the lovely inhabitants of our live chat on tntradio.live. Yes, inhabitants is, it's a compliment, people. It's a compliment. It seems to be the vibe is the same. Shenanigans and skullduggery with these alerts, a load of old nonsense. They're trying to terrify us. I don't think it's going to work against us, Natalie. But, you know, grannies everywhere will be clasping their Androids and iPhones to their chest. Might trigger a few heart attacks, might depopulate the world a little bit quicker. Maybe that's another aspect of this. Scare them to death, the old folk. What do you reckon?
Well, like I said, I've actually heard this siren. It's like so much louder than anything that would normally come out of your phone. I didn't even know it was possible. And like my autistic child was actually crying and I had to take it. And it does make you panic as well. So they're saying, oh, you know, you can't access your phone till you turn it off. And once you know, when you get in a panic, it's not that easy to access or do anything. So yeah, there are going to be people that are actually really quite disturbed by the whole thing. But that's, I do believe that's the point of it. It's, but you know what, they want us to live in a perpetual sense of fear. Anyone that's living in fear can be easily controlled. And there are people that live in fear anyway.
The only time I have no problem with an alert blasting from my phone is if it's a background noise in a good heavy metal track. So there's been a lot of good tunes over the years and they're very good. They use the old... There's a band called Airborne who are like an AC/DC ripoff, and they have a fantastic song, and there's a big air raid siren at the start. And remember old Frankie Goes to Hollywood back in the 80s, Two Tribes? When you hear the air raid siren, you and your family must take cover. You know, that's great if it's a song, but it's not so great if you're just eating your roast beef and Yorkshire pudding on St. George's Day and like saying, coming out of your phone. You might even drop it into the gravy boat. There'll be mobile phones smashed all over the place. Yeah. It might be a bad thing.
Well, yeah, 90s garage music. I used to like have a lot of police sirens in it as well, deliberately. So when you turned on the radio, you weren't quite sure if you'd be...
Yeah.
And that was the irony of the songs. It's the sound of the police, you know.
Yeah. Or the Prodigy. They used to have some great police sound samples. Yep. So when you think about it...
Yep.
There is a time and a place for warning alerts, but usually it's on a good old banging tune, a good old banging club thumper, or a good old metal track, but not coming out of your mobile phone. So just take note, people. Disable the function. If you're listening and you're traumatized by what we're talking about, or you have an input on what we're talking about here, please don't be shy. You can give us a call if you feel led to. And if not, you can just sit and listen to Natalie and I, because we have plenty to talk about. Two things Natalie and I will never be short of is words. That's only one thing. Words twice then. How's about that?
I don't ever run out of anything to say. That is, everybody tells me I talk too much. So an hour's won't be long enough. Oh,
this is your dream job then, isn't it? And it's mine too. We never shut up. They could give us a 24-hour show without any, well, maybe a toilet break every hour, but that's about it. And I reckon we could do it, Natalie. I reckon we could do it. Speaking of alerts, Suella Braverman. Suella Braverman's been making the news again. She's talking tough on immigration, as they do. They talk the talk, but the question is, do they walk the walk? Now, you sent me a snapshot of Suella, who I can only describe as being in raptures of ecstasy, standing on top of a building somewhere in Kigali in Rwanda with some African contractors. And they're also absolutely ecstatically happy. I'm sure they are. I'm sure they're happy with all that British money pouring into Rwanda. But some old duffer on Twitter, a he, him type person, a pronouner, has said, this is one of the most bizarre political photos I've ever seen. This is the British Home Secretary in apparent ecstasy at the building of detention centres in Rwanda, where she dreams of sending desperate people. Is this normal? Do you think she lies in bed at night, Natalie, dreaming of building detention centres and sending those immigrants to Rwanda? Is that what she's dreaming of, do you think? Or is she just, glad to reduce our hotel bills by £6 million a day? Maybe that's what she's happy
dreams.
About.
No, it'll be dreaming of her own career and fame. I'm quite sure she doesn't dream about the immigrants whatsoever. I mean, yesterday on Twitter, they had it trending. So Suella Braverman out was trending. That seems to be one of the latest woke, like, pushing now that they've got a real problem with her immigration bill and pushing her as evil. And the picture that you were talking about, they'd obviously edited it yesterday. So the kind of progressive left that are really pushing against this new bill, obviously only put her in the photo. So all you could see, and this was the photo that was going all around Twitter, was just her in front of the detention centre. Like you said, it was a very odd, inappropriate photo, because obviously they've caught her just when she's laughing. It looks like, you know, one of those evil, like, is it Dr. Evil? Well, like, mwah, ah, 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 ah.
Yeah.
That's kind of like also what she seems to be doing. But then it took me a while because I sent you the original. So once you actually see it in context, which obviously they didn't want you to find on Twitter very easily, you know, you get the whole picture, which is she was there with Rwandans and other people, and obviously a joke had been told. And I don't know what people expect, that you're not allowed to laugh at all, you know, if you're doing any type of political work. And I'm not trying to defend her necessarily. I'm no fan of the Tories or any politicians. But, you know, like we always say, you know, what's been put in the media, you have to question, you have to try and see the bigger picture. And you have to wonder why they've let that picture go in to the papers as well, because quite clearly it paints her in a very bad light. I mean, it's designed to do so. So then you're thinking, well, if the media are putting that out there, they're also trying to show you that they're not in favour with the immigration bill. Yeah. Do they even want this immigration bill going through? That would be my take on it when I saw it all yesterday. I don't know about you.
Well, this is something you and I, way back in the mists of time, I think about Mayor June of last year, I remember you and I talking about this proposition. At the time, it was Priti Patel, Where did she go? Where's she now? The question asked. And Boris Johnson was the Prime Minister. How the water has passed under the bridge. But this old nugget has floated back up to the surface again. So the Rwanda deportations, we talked about them last year. There was people put on a flight. The European Court intervened. They said it was ruining people's dignity and breaching their human rights. So it was stopped and then it disappeared and then it's back again. So there's an expansion on this that I do want to touch on really briefly, but we'll take a quick news break. And when we do, there's more photographs of Suella shaking hands, grinning like a Cheshire cat from ear to ear at the construction sites of these so-called detention centres, which they're not. They're bloody houses, Natalie. They're houses and people will be educated and people will be given employment there. It is not a detention centre. But let's look at a little bit more details of this when we come back, because apparently the word on the street is Germany are going to be availing of this too. Could it be that they are overflowing with economic migrants and it's going to bankrupt and bust the country? France's retirement age is being raised. The streets of Paris are on fire because the borders have been open. I think Rwanda's going to be getting a lot of business this year from a lot of European countries, and probably many more will follow. But let's take a quick news break, and when we come back, let's delve into this one a little bit more. Let's waltz down memory lane, Rwanda style, again when we come back after this news break here on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio News.
Huge news, 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 news.
Matt Boylan here with your TNT headlines. The latest batch of Twitter files has revealed an academic group backed by the US government forced the social media site to censor factual information about COVID-19 to avoid fueling vaccine hesitancy. Everyone who owns a mobile phone in the UK will have their devices pinged by the government next month as Britain tests a new emergency warning system, and Washington's vowed to reject any proposal of a ceasefire in Ukraine that's put forward by Russia.
Are you enjoying listening to TNT Radio?
Do you think we're doing a good job?
Then please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter? Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's news talk, TNT Radio.
Okay, just following on from this Rwanda business, why Rwanda? Why Rwanda? That's the question, and that's the question we asked last year. They have a lot of ties
with
the good old WEF. Yes, they do. Rwanda and Uganda and Kenya. Watch them. We tipped them last year to step up to the world stage as players. Now it looks like this is coming to pass, Natalie. WEF equals money.
I seem to remember you saying you have a better idea of the area. It's where they're situated as well. It's a nice location for extending if they need to other areas in Africa. I think also the government there in Rwanda are going to be earning a lot of money themselves. Ooh. I don't think they're that upset about the prospects of the immigrants being sent over.
Everybody's smiling. That's why everybody's smiling like proverbial Cheshire cats, Natalie. What we're being told here is there's an article in The Express that was just published yesterday. Is the European court backing down? So European judges may be preparing to withdraw their opposition to the takeoff of migrant flights from the UK to Rwanda. Suella Braverman spent the two-day visit touring long-term migrant accommodation, learning about the education and employment support that would be available. And in her words, quote, "I would call it a blessing." Well, of course she would. She said, "I've met refugees from several countries here who are enormously grateful for the sanctuary that Rwanda has provided, education opportunities, security, a home, and an opportunity for the future." Well, you know, it's like a, how would you call it, a holiday brochure. They're going to tell you they've got a swimming pool. They're going to tell you that there's three hot meals a day. But sometimes when you get to your accommodation in Benidorm, you realize it's still a building site. There's no electricity and no running water. They can talk the talk, walk the walk. But I think actually they are spending huge amounts of money here, and I think they will be well looked after.
Well, it could go either way. The Rwanda government could be even more corrupt than other areas, and they could take their money and not feed them or even house them correctly. But if they want their money to continue, then they're probably going to need and to show evidence that they are looking after those immigrants to some degree. I think the whole immigration debate seems a little bit odd. I know we touched on it last week, but why... why are they pushing so far, particularly in our media, that it's so against human rights to even think or question any immigrants coming in or sending them to Rwanda? Now, don't get me wrong. You know, I think the majority of the general public would absolutely be in favour of a genuine refugee who is actually fleeing a war-torn country, or a woman and child being looked after. But for some reason, that's being pushed that every single person is like that. And we're well aware that that isn't the case. So if you've got people coming into the country who aren't genuine, is there any real problem, do you think, looking at them more closely and having more checks? And if they're not in severe danger, but they still need to be housed, and they're actually getting clothed and food and a roof over their head in Rwanda, is that against human rights if they're not genuinely in danger? And to me,
I
actually logically can't see the reason there's such massive outrage about it and against human rights. I mean,
The word refugee is misunderstood, okay? So all the headlines will read that you and I, for example, are anti-refugee. TNT are anti-refugee. Yep. They're spewing anti-refugee rhetoric. We're not. You've just made that abundantly clear. If someone is in danger of death, or they're being severely persecuted, maybe their family's been killed and they're on their uppers, and we have the capacity to bring them and look after them, I'm all for that. I have no problem with that. But that is a demonstrable case of persecution. If someone rocks up on the shores after exiting a dinghy with 60 of his male friends, all with their iPhones in hand, claiming they're fleeing persecution and death, they've left their wives, their kids, their mothers, their fathers, their grannies and their grandas behind in danger, I'm sorry, Natalie, but I'm not buying that they're refugees. I would call them migrants or economic migrants, or at best asylum seekers, because they can't be verified as refugees. The term's misunderstood.
And that's what we're saying. Genuine refugees, I know nobody I know would question that. But I really don't think the majority of them are. And they're almost saying it's against their human rights to send them to Rwanda if they can't get all of the benefits that the UK would give them. And I'm thinking, but they're not entitled to the UK benefits. I mean, half of the people in the UK struggle to get the UK benefits when they really need them. So why would someone who's not even a genuine refugee, it stop their human rights to not get them? It's all of it. I think it seems very much propaganda to me. How the media are portraying the whole immigration debate and its polarizing views, and they are making out that if you question it at all, you're a racist, you are extreme far right, and everybody should welcome with open arms anyone into the country. I mean, I was thinking you'd really see the virtue signaling for what it is if suddenly you said to the whole country, there's a referendum. Are you willing to give 15% of your income to all the immigrants that are now coming in because you are so concerned and about their human rights. What do you think would be the actual answer on a referendum if that was the case?
Hell, if there was an option for yes, the answer alternative would be hell no. It wouldn't be yes or no. Yep. It would be hell no. People wouldn't do it. They're talking through their pipes. As you say, it's easy to point the finger and say, we need to do this. But then if same people are asked, well, how many have you brought in? How many of those men and dinghies have you housed in your house for free or for €100 a week or whatever joke figure that was bandied about last year was too? The answer would be zero. Now, here's another thing, right? Here's another thing. When they move them to Rwanda, the British taxpayer will be paying for the flights. Okay. The British taxpayer is currently paying 6 million quid a day, putting people in hotels. And the British taxpayer will be funding the building of these projects in Rwanda. You think the Rwandan government are paying for this? The construction, the materials, the electricity, the housing, blah, blah, blah. No, we are paying for it. So we're simply paying for it in a different location. Now, Rwanda and Uganda are side by side. They sit side by side. I've been in Uganda many, many times in the western part of the country, okay? In the 1990s, there was a genocide in Rwanda. 800,000 people were killed in the space of about 4 or 5 weeks, ethnic cleansing. Many, many people fled as genuine refugees. They literally ran for their lives across the border from Rwanda into Uganda. Now, when they arrived, do you think the Uganda government had houses waiting for them, had education schemes, had a bright future? No, it's like, you can come in if you like, but if you mess around and break the law, we'll jail you, we'll kill you. And if you want to live here, you better start earning. And where am I going to sleep? Under that tree over there until you get yourself on your feet. The British government are looking after these people pretty damn well, if you ask me.
Well, that's what my point was. If you were a genuine refugee and literally leaving somewhere in fear of your life, you would be grateful. Imagine going to somewhere where they're offering all you those things. I can't understand how that's not against, you know, human rights. It seems like propaganda. You know how the mainstream media will put out any story, and if you put it out long enough, and a lot of the general public won't question it. And they're telling them that in Rwanda, it's going to be against their human rights. And nobody's really thinking or questioning it. And they're just believing, the Gary Linekers of the world, you know, who they all went on strike for our football pundit Gary Lineker because he didn't agree with the immigration bill in Rwanda. But he is also taking the highest paid wage from the BBC. Now, to me, if he agreed with it that much, why couldn't they say to him, will you take half of your pay cut and we'll help the immigrants? Because I bet he wouldn't be so speaking out and have such a voice about it if he was going to take such a pay cut. It all seems very virtue signaling to me.
And again, people are just completely ignorant. They don't know what a refugee is. They don't know what an asylum seeker is. They don't know what an economic migrant is. They don't know what conditions people that are genuine refugees have to. Listen, if Natalie, if you today were to lose, I mean everything, the roof over your head, you were literally, there was a gang chasing you out of Reading, and I gave you a call, said, listen, if you can make your way to Belfast, my mate's got a spare sofa, you and the kids can kip on the floor, you'll take it, Natalie. I'm not staying in someone's sofa. I want money. I want medical. No, you'll run your ass out of there, or I will run ass out of there as quick as you can and take whatever help you're given. That's how you can assess who's genuine and not. They'll take anything they're given and be grateful for it because you're literally saving a life, possibly. And that's the litmus test, is it not?
And that's why I'm confused about the immigration bill, because as far as I'm aware, and this is supposed to be against human rights and it's going through the Houses of Parliament and a lot of them are saying it won't pass. They're not saying we're going to shoot down the boats. I mean, that would be against all human rights. You get on a boat and we see it in the sea and we're going to shoot it down. No, they're saying when you get to the borders, we're going to do more checks and it's going to be easier to detain and deport you. That they're not trying to kill anyone, you know.
I'm laughing. I'm laughing at you. I'm not laughing at you. You're saying there. You know, we're not talking about shooting out the boats. Well, a certain TNT employee is very fond of referencing torpedoes when it comes to the English Channel. I'm sure he's only joking, but he's mentioned it more than once, and he reckons that would send out a very strong message to anyone if we were to wing a few torpedoes their way. And of course, we are only joking about that. Probably shooting. Do. But yeah, I mean, like, let's face it, it's not that bad, is it?
And honestly, if that did ever come up, then even I would be saying, absolutely, that's against human rights. You know, so there are some people, you know, that the more extreme right that would say, shoot the boats down and that'll stop them coming, you know. But I would be completely against that. Mentioning D-D. No names.
The old torpedo Denslow, if he's listening. Yeah, yeah, we like to have a little bit of a joke.
But this immigration bill, that is literally all they're saying is we want to put in more checks and confirm they're genuine refugees and not people who are just coming here to use our money. So yeah, exactly. So much propaganda around the whole issue, and it's designed to polarise and make people look like racists, in my opinion, educated debate. He's still laughing.
A certain someone is listening into our conversation, and he simply said, torpedoes work. That's all I'm saying. I'm not going to name that person, but on the live chat has just said, torpedoes work. And who are we to argue with said person? Listen, Australians, by the way, we've got to take another quick break. The Aussies are not exempt from this either. Apparently, the borders are being thrown open in Australia. Albo wants to welcome 400,000 refugees into Australia this year, putting enormous strain on jobs, enormous strain on housing. So if you're listening in from Oz or the UK and this is affecting you, you can see it affecting you negatively or positively, possibly, you can give us a call when we come back. We're going to take a quick break, literally 2 minutes, and then we'll be back. The lines will still be open until 9 a.m. if you so desire to give us a call. Otherwise, we shall carry on regardless here on the good ship TNT Radio.
Get ready to stink in order to save the climate.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
The Biden administration is releasing new washing machine rules in the United States in order to combat global warming. Joe Biden's Energy Department proposed new energy efficiency standards for washing machines that would require, quote, new appliances use considerably less water, all in an effort to, quote, confront the global climate crisis. Add this to the proposed ban on gas stoves, ban on gas-powered cars, control of your thermostat through smart meters, regulating your dishwashers out of existence, energy shortages, blackouts, lab-grown meat forcing you to eat bugs, banning actual meat, issuing flying restrictions, forcing you to mass transit. You must sacrifice for the climate, all in an effort to confront the global climate crisis. Do you feel better now? This is no longer virtue signaling. This is virtue mandating, virtue coercion. We must reject the Great Reset. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
I've been driving for most of my life and I've always been a safe driver. But as I've grown older, driving has become more challenging. Intersections feel busier. Driving in peak hour traffic and travelling longer distances is stressful. And driving at night or in bad weather is risky. Even small mistakes can be costly. Look for the signs. If driving is getting harder, there are alternatives. Make a plan to stop driving on your terms. Don't stop driving by accident. Think Road Safety, a message from the Government of South Australia.
If you're talking about it,
playing games with the debt ceiling is dangerous and would spell disaster.
We're talking about
today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, this is Open Line with Natalie Cheel and Rick Munn. We're talking about air raid sirens. We're talking about dodgy club tunes from the 90s. We're talking about Sheila Braverman, Gary Lineker, Rwanda, genocide, Ukraine. Well, haven't talked about Ukraine yet, or have we? Well, anyway, we're not gonna, hopefully. I'm tired hearing about it. But anyway, couple other things, Natalie, maybe we can get covered off before the end of the hour. Two things that you've highlighted. Number one, I want to talk just at the end about a story close to home with you in Reading to do with a teacher that took her life, unfortunately. But before we get to that really quickly, let's touch on this other story here about Oxford Street becoming a ghost town. So Oxford Street is closed for business. How London's iconic shopping destination has transformed, with dozens of stores now lying empty. You would have thought that was about the best piece of real estate in London for shopping. You remember Monopoly, if you played that when you were a kid? One of the little green, dark green houses was Oxford Street, Bond Street, Regent Street. It was on the Monopoly board, but now it looks like it's a ghost town. What's the problem with Oxford Street?
Well, I actually live really close to London, so Reading's only a half an hour train journey to London. So for like when I was a teenager, the most exciting thing to do was get hop on a train and go to Oxford Street to go shopping. It's a massive long street and absolutely chock-a-block with every single one of the most famous biggest outlets, you know. And of course, what's happened since COVID? What's happened since the lockdowns? We know they're pushing online shopping. There's staffing problems. There's just general with the money, with the actual finances, economic problems. I mean, in Reading, Reading is becoming a ghost town. But I would have thought London would be okay. You can see all the pictures. Even Oxford Street couldn't escape the economic downturn.
Have you went back recently, literally to places like that? I know it's only half an hour away, but I mean, since I stopped working in an office, which was just about 3 years ago now, even though I'm only 10 minutes down the road from Belfast on the train, I've only been in maybe two or three times in that time. I don't go in unless I have to. Have you been back to London in that area since the glory days of your teens, or have you literally noticed this yourself?
I've noticed that when you go back to London now, because I've been there a couple of times recently, it's the bars and the restaurants that have absolutely chock-a-block again. It seems to be after the lockdown that people are wanting to spend their money, and they missed the opportunity to socialise to have that, the food, the drink, all of that type of thing, because the shopping seems not as important to anyone anymore. That doesn't seem like a pastime or hobby that people are spending their money on. And mainly, I think, it's because people got in the habit of doing it online. And I think routines with humans are hard to break. Yeah. And I think it's the shopping that is really been affected more than anything else, because the bars and the restaurants are absolutely just as busy. You can't get in without booking over in London. So I think it's really the shops that have taken the biggest hit.
I think as well, people literally are, you know, I used to work in financial services, and I can remember one day we were out with a young lad, okay, and was with my district manager, and we gave him advice that was very against rules and regulations, but he seemed to like it. Okay, so we asked him about his funding and his pension. He said, I'm not really prepared to spend any more than 20 quid a month or 30 quid a month. And my boss at the time, I'll never forget it, he said, listen, here's my advice to you, cancel it right now. It's really not going to be worth jack when you hit 65, and in his words, and I quote, you'd be better taking that £30 a month and pissing it up against the wall now while you're still young. And that's basically, I'm quoting him word for word. It never left me. And the reality is, maybe what you're seeing now in London, I'm seeing it in Belfast as well. Darren's seeing it in and around Plymouth. Retail is dying a death, but hospitality seems to be blossoming. Maybe people are like, you know what? What little I have spare, I'm not going to buy a new washing machine. I'm going to have a night out. I'm going to take my wife out and my partner, my boyfriend, whatever, my kids, to have some fun. Living in the moment, it seems to be, is the way forward.
I think it all comes from the lockdown. I think when people got their freedoms removed, it really became apparent what was actually missing. And it wasn't the shopping. Nobody got their shopping or online shopping taken away. So I think people are still fearful, and not just people like us that watch the news and think about what's coming. They're worried it could happen again. So it's more living in the moment and thinking, let's go to theatres and restaurants and meet up with people before they do it again, or there's another pandemic. Or I think people are thinking, let's get it done now.
A lot of people agreeing with you there. Just as you're talking, I'm just keeping an eye on the chat. Holly and Mazzy are both agreeing with you. I don't know where you ladies are from out there, Holly and Mazzy. You don't need to say, but is it the same in your part of England or Scotland or Wales or wherever it is that you're currently living? Because here in Ireland, north and south, and I mean, like I walk around my town a lot. I've been born and raised here. I'll probably die in this town. I'm literally seeing it dying. It's almost like a cancer has set in, and the shops are, there's four main streets, arterial streets, and literally from the outside in, all the shops, old shops are closing. They're being renovated and turned into flats, accommodation, everywhere. Houses. It seems to be, it's not just where you live in Reading, or it's not just in Oxford Street, it's not just Belfast or Lisburn. It seems to be a nationwide thing, Natalie.
But I also think it's also part of Agenda 30 and the WEF plan and the climate change plan, isn't it? When you think about it, they want to get people to be able to be at home, getting their necessities or their luxuries. They don't really want people having to go to the shops. If you kill the high street, then people are going to do much more on their smartphone and on their laptops. And then, you're making sure that everything's all at their own little home portal. Mm-hmm. And that was part of the plan by design.
Well, Holly's just written in that she lives in Surrey. I should have remembered that. One of the first messages she ever left me was she does a lot of painting and decorating in posh houses in Surrey, and she usually has the radio blasting TNT radio in said posh houses. So, Holly's in Surrey. Mazzy says she's also concerned this with her estate. The council has sold out and fear will come there as well. That's in relation to a comment that Tanya has made, actually. A considerable number of UK properties for the purposes of accommodating the huge influx of young foreign men. So this all ties in again. The shops are closing. They're being re-imaged or repurposed as accommodation. But the question is, Natalie, who's going to be going into those? Will they literally become a haven or a epicenter for hundreds, which is happening in Ireland, thousands even, of young men coming in from overseas that we don't know who they are and we don't know what they're all about? I want to squeeze this one story in that you've also highlighted because I know it's close to your heart. Yep. The Reading Business School teacher, she died suddenly. Apparently at the time, obviously when you hear died suddenly, you think about vaccine injuries, but not this time. What was it?
Well, yeah, I mean, the reason I wanted to bring it up, because I know a little bit more, I actually live literally, the school is walking distance, you know, I know a little bit more because when her death on January 8th was announced, it was the words died suddenly. So also to point out to people that each time you hear it, you know, we should be asking more questions because it has now been announced that actually she killed herself after an Ofsted inspection. And that particular school has been the best rated school in the whole of Reading. I mean, literally the house prices here are unbelievable if you're in that school catchment. It hasn't needed an Ofsted for 13 years. It's an excellent, excellent school. And because of basically new bureaucracy and new rules via Ofsted, there's been no real problems with the rest of the school, but because of record keeping within new safeguarding rules, this is why it went to inadequate from outstanding. And she just could not take to me, it's not real criticism anyway. This goes about everything. It's the whole inspection process is wrong and it's in stark contrast. Now, the government do not take any accountability or responsibility for their many massive mistakes. There weren't any even real mistakes here. The fear behind the inspections, who's inspecting the inspectors? And, you know, she was well-loved. There are a lot of people in my area that are absolutely in bits about the injustice of the whole thing. So, you know, it epitomises the whole problem, I think, in nationwide about the people at the bigger end, they can escape all accountability for anything. But people that are actually good doing good jobs, they're quite happy to destroy them for some stupid red tape.
This is easy for me to say, right? Because I tend not to get too worked up about what people say about me, about people literally, physically, or verbally attacking me. I just don't care. But I'm not saying that's because I'm super strong in my mind. And that's a position that I've arrived at after a lot of aggravation and a lot of abuse over the years. I'm almost like bulletproof now. You can say what you want. You can do what you want. You can't bring me down. That's the bottom line. However, there's a lot of people out there that are very self-conscious. They take criticism very, very personally. And in this lady's case, sadly, this was done published locally, a school that's known for its performance.
Excellent.
People bought houses because of that. She would have been shouldering that responsibility. And then for them to come in and regrade that, it was so bad or it had such a detrimental effect on her that she went out and took her own life. This is literally another fatality at the hands of the people that should know better and are talking. Who are these people that do the gradings anyway? I mean, they even live in the area, maybe, I don't know. But it's ridiculous.
And the new standards, they're actually these new Ofsted the regulations that they're looking at are all woke. These safeguarding procedures, of course, this is a very affluent area. They don't need to have the same safeguarding procedures or the experience because the most of the people that are in the catchment area are, let's be honest, mega rich, you know? And that's not to say that all rich people, but we know economically less developed areas will have greater safeguarding problems. It just goes with the territory. So, it's the whole thing when you compare it to government, which have no accountability, yet you know, normal people doing good jobs are affected this way, and they COVID didn't make a difference.
And think about Gavin Williamson. That's another skitter that we talked about last year, the health secretary. He was knighted after destroying children's mental health and wrecking their exam results and so on and so forth. He got a knighthood, but then you have this lady who unfortunately took her own life. Natalie, the music is playing, the metal is pumping and thumping and grinding and it's all good. I like it. But unfortunately, that means you have to exit stage left. But you will be back again tomorrow by the grace of God, I hope. At 8 a.m. UK time sharp. Big salute to Natalie Cheele and all you lovely residents of Reading. I'll be back after the news with Darren and Stephen Kelly and Natalie Vassallo from New South Wales talking about skullduggery in the police force. Come back soon.